DR Power Equipment is the industry leader in field and brush mowers. Their full line of machines are designed to clear acres of tough weeds, woody brush, and saplings up to 3 inches thick, hour after hour, year after year. Just one mow, and you'll agree nothing stops a DR. Visit drpower.com to learn more and shop the sale today.
Down to business with Bobby Kerr.
Brought to you by Bank of Ireland
on News Talk.
So, first up, let's take a look at those business stories and indeed a few other stories making this morning's papers. I'm delighted to be joined by Caroline Reedy of the HR Suite and Ronan Reed from Cantor Fitzgerald. Good morning to you both, and you're both very welcome.
Morning, Bobby.
Morning, Bobby.
Now, Ronan, Paris 2024, a joyous romp in the midsummer rain as the Olympics begin. The front page of the Irish Times tells us this morning.
Yeah, indeed. I mean, start of the Olympics, there was the various articles. There's a great comparison with 100 years ago, which I thought was interesting, because Ireland would have sent its first team over, and how many athletes there were, and it was their first time. And it was 48 athletes, two women, this time 133 athletes and 64 women. So good to see. For Paris, it's a real showcase, and, yeah, and they do it well. I remember going to the World Cup, Soccer World Cup, when they had it on. They organized it well, but security also takes a focus as well. And you could see the emphasis on some of that last night. But I thought other things, like very symbolic, a refugee Olympic team as well.
Yeah.
You know, of people that are displaced, a boat full of people displaced. So thought that was relevant.
I didn't see it all, but I saw some of it, Caroline. And one of the things that kind of surprised me was there was at least two or three countries that I'd never heard of. I don't know. Was I the only one who was learning about new countries?
No, I think we were all doing that, in fairness. But wasn't it brilliant to see the diversity of people and nations taking part?
No, absolutely.
And even though some countries had six people, another 86 or whatever, it was fantastic to see them all represented. But what a brilliant showcase. I think, you know, there's... it's a long show, but what a showcase of Paris and of Europe in general. And I think they tried to cover everything from culture to fashion, you know, diversity, the city of love. I think they really did showcase it really, really well. But for a lot of the people taking part, they must be wrecked this morning getting up, and hopefully they didn't catch a cold in that rain as well, because really the weather didn't play a part. But overall, I thought it was a really good start.
It's interesting as well, Ronan, that they, you know, having to bring forward events.
Yeah.
The opening ceremony on the basis of
schedule. The Sevens rugby was really tough.
Wasn't it fantastic?
It was fantastic. But to have your event over when you're going to the opening ceremony is really hard. Like, you know, when you're thinking of what the function of an opening ceremony is. And it's such a salient point at the moment in French politics. I mean, we're right in the middle of election time showcasing it. Macron will be out there, like, you know, no doubt trying to garner up support for what it is. But Paris does do it well. Like, no matter what, like, you know, as a city, it's a great city. And I think they've done good pretty well.
Yeah, and there's a new energy, Caroline, about the Olympics now that we can all, once you watch the opening event, you know, there's often a lot of sort of cynicism and that about the Olympics, particularly from the French themselves.
Yeah, I did.
But now that the event has started.
I think so. And I think as well, even the uniforms, for want of a better word, that everybody got to wear, and the fact that they had their county logos.
I interviewed her here last week.
I thought that was brilliant.
A wonderful lady.
She's done a super job. And I think as well, it's just really elevating how important we see the Olympics now and the diversity of sport. And wasn't it brilliant to see the flag bearers and, you know, all of the different roles that have really become such prominent privileges now. So I'm really excited to see it. I think the six medals we've got, I think we're definitely going to trump that. We've got lots of hopefuls in lots of categories, and really I think there's huge interest, and we've really got behind the advertising. Even has been brilliant, to be fair, hasn't it?
Yeah.
You know, that we've really seen you know, sponsors and just generally the country get behind these athletes.
I think they've storyboarded sport much better over time. I remember at the Women's Soccer World Cup, one of the things they got all the players to do was sit down and put on their first club jersey. And I remember one of the girls that come through a club that we coach, but to see her in her Park Celtic jersey was great. Like, you know,
yeah.
And they publicise and connect the story whatever sport, where it goes back into a community. And it's because somebody always coached and somebody always did it. So, yeah, I think it's super.
When I have you there, Ronan, global markets suddenly nervy about their own overconfidence. This is a story that caught my eye in the Irish Examiner. When we look at the opening line is the scariest thing in markets is a rout without a trigger. Being the opening line, you wouldn't agree?
I just think they were afraid to say what the trigger was. The trigger was Kamala Harris. I mean, there's a big difference between a Democrat and
remind us of what actually happened. So
markets fell sharply Wednesday.
Yeah.
Particularly a lot of the artificial intelligence stocks fell, the likes of NVIDIA and others. They're all, like, put it in context, NVIDIA is still up 5 or 6-fold over the last couple of years. And tech stocks alone this year up about 19%. So markets are strong. But I think one of the things people realized very quickly was that, and we'll talk about it later, Harris and Trump are closer than, like, you know, in polls than people realize in trajectory. And a Democrat, and people can't still figure out what her policy stance. She used to be quite liberal. And now she's not. So markets prefer, no matter what they say, they prefer Republicans, always have. So I think they don't like to admit it, but that was some of the connection. And also I think that the second thing is that the consumer outlook, even though look back figures look okay, consumer outlook is trickier. You saw that in Ryanair's results this week. Ryanair was down the sharpest fall I've seen in a number of years because consumers wouldn't pay up for flights. And like the average fare was significantly down. Numbers disappointed. I've seen that trigger in a couple of places where it's the consumer is more selective.
Nothing to do with the CEO's bonus or anything like that.
No,
keeping that share price
not at all.
Well, above
and
a particular
out.
Number.
He missed out.
He misses out. But I was looking at
it'll come again. I'd say
there was a scale of CEO salaries, and what surprised me was he was mid to lower end of the table, like because. And that surprised me, just given the success of the airline over the years and the importance it plays in our own economy here. The amount of tourists it brings here, like you can never underestimate it. But the consumer is selective. And you hear that across hospitality industries and others, that tourism numbers are slightly lighter, travel numbers are lighter, and retailers are saying consumers are more selective. So I think that the factors on markets was certainly the swing more back into Democrat, and I think also some lighter consumer numbers. Interest rates look like generally they're going to remain higher, but they will, like, they're not going any higher, and there is talk about cuts in the States.
Okay. Caroline, had you any thoughts on that particular article?
I think, in fairness, you've got a guru there in Ronan, so let me not even try.
Well, we'll ask you then about Amazon coming and the thought that it could redraw the Irish retail landscape. A big piece in today's Irish Examiner. There's kind of two schools of thought on this. One is, I suppose, that if Amazon.ie sets up that, you know, the people that currently buy from the UK or from Europe will start buying Amazon locally. But Amazon are putting a particular spin on it that the Irish small SME manufacturer of certain goods will have a platform to sell their wares. I'm not so sure I quite buy that, but I think it'll be more the former.
Yeah, I think without doubt we see that the younger shopper particularly, of which is a huge chunk of the generation now, buy online. And I suppose ultimately it's 6,500 jobs across Cork, Dublin and Drogheda at the moment. And obviously once 2025 comes, they're saying they're going to have the .ie option. It means for the customer, you don't have to pay the customs charges and it'll be lower prices. And they're saying that they're going to also support smaller businesses. And they have a few testimonials from Drinks Botanicals Ireland, Vegan Proteins, Powder, Earth Champs and others to say, look, Amazon has really helped our business and we welcome this. I suppose I think it's really positive to see that SkillsNet have a Mentors Works program for small businesses. And they're saying, prepare now if you're a small business to try and see, can you take advantage of Amazon.ie coming here? But no question, we've seen also the Debenhams, the Argus's, Toys R Us and companies like that that are, you know, high street that are losing out to online. But I think we've seen also that businesses are shifting. Like we've seen even simple companies like the Marks and Spencers, etc., you know, needing to shift to suit bricks and mortar with high rents, high rates. We know the cost of doing business is expensive. Online is a real option. But I think Amazon, we have to embrace it. Yeah. They're coming. But without doubt, we're seeing a big change on the high street. And we see Disney, for example, as well, you know, saying that their annual sales have fallen. But again, I think the customer is being more discerning and saying, God, that's, you know, expensive.
We'll come back to that in a second. Ronan, I just, the big piece in this article for me was the US analysis of shopping centres, where they say that across the US, department store fell from 14.1% of retail sales in 1993 to 2.6% last year.
And you can see the impact in Ireland. I mean, Hammerson, like, you know, the challenges they've had with Dundrum, the sale of the retail outlets in Kildare this week, the cost if somebody wants to be on a main street, the cost of rent has gone up. So a lot of people were forced, like, you know, a lot of businesses. But sorry, the first thing I would say is retail has changed three or four times already. I mean, the advent originally when you had original supermarkets, then you had Tesco Inn and Tesco stores, and then you had Aldi and Lidl. Then you had, during the pandemic, you had the massive move online, like businesses had to force. So we've had a number of those transitions. And as you say, 2.6% of sales in that side. So it's how you get to the consumer and how you pose value. I thought one of the booksellers was saying, and it's something I have noticed before, is that book sales are more expensive on Amazon. You'd think Amazon is cheaper, but then when you look at Easton's or other sides, it's less so. But also consumers, everything that people talk to about is about cybersecurity, worries about it. So you have a big brand, so people sometimes feel more comfortable.
Yeah.
And the younger generation, Caroline, absolutely correct. I mean, they'll shop where best value, easiest to deal with, quickest organized, but they also go direct to brands themselves. I mean, any of them buying sports goods buy directly from the Adidas's, the other people directly on brands. I think this change coming. Certainly, but I think they've already been gearing to it because their deliveries are quicker and everything else locally. I mean, I always find it interesting, Amazon, their predominant profitability is on the technology side. Like, it's AWS is the driver of all of their profits. Yeah. They don't actually make that much money on retail, which is interesting.
Interesting as well, because I think, and Caroline referenced it there, if we look at the Disney store on Grafton Street, again, I would have thought that the profitability, again, seems very low relative. The company recorded a profit before tax, 106,000. Down from 115,000. Well, I think the profitability there is elsewhere. It's not in that shop.
It's elsewhere. I mean, their streaming channels are more profitable. The other businesses, the theme parks. Also, a big driver of their shops at any point is big movies and kids movies. So if they haven't had any blockbusters, they're not selling the same amount of merchandise. Yeah. So if you look at Grafton Street is now driven by very large brands who can afford that rent. So their store here, like, you know, the Lego store across the road from it. So it gears into it. But you need a big movie, a couple of big movies at the time.
Well, we're being told in today's Independent that the operating lease costs are just over $1 million on that site.
Yeah.
So that's significant.
That's a very expensive rent.
It is expensive.
As someone who rented the basement of it for a number of years, I wasn't paying anything like that. But anyway, there we have it. Good news for BOD, Caroline. Brian O'Driscoll's analysed by Gordon Deegan in both The Independent and indeed The Irish Times. Doesn't tell us much about what he actually does, but it does tell us that the numbers are good.
Yeah, big time. And I suppose Brian and Amy, they are definitely the dream couple. And when you see the finances between the two of them, they're obviously earning to match that. His accumulated profits have risen to 10.46 million. And in the last accounts they've just put in August for his company alone, it's 810,000 post-tax profits up to the end of August. So really significant. And in fairness to Amy, who's in her own right, has her own company, she's also showing post-tax profits of 233,000 in the last 12 months. So I suppose a lot of their publicity is driven by them individually, and they're both being really good at what they do and really likeable individuals. But turning it into hard cash, I think, is what you have to really admire. And both of them also doing a lot of good for charity and, you know, other work that you can see very much in the media as well.
Yeah, so. I was delighted to see these numbers, Ronan, because often that transition from sport to after sport to business can be challenging.
It is.
Brian O'Driscoll's made a pretty good job of it.
He has. And I think one of the most salient things for me was he set up this company in 2001 when he was 22. His dad is a director. Clearly good advice he got at the time. But also, I remember in our business, we would take interns and others, and RUPA, I don't know what it's called today, but the Rugby Players Association, would always look at the future prospects for them. They would suggest college, they would put them through internship, they would look at the future. So they clearly are really responsibly and well managed at a young age and build it. Like, that's 2001 he had set up the company, and the earnings are 10.47 million, the accumulated profits over the time. So the plan ahead, the dealing with it, and they've done it with other players as well.
You can see that. And I think when you think about the professionalisation of rugby, it's still relatively, you know, it's only a couple of decades old.
It is, and I somebody was posing a good question the other day, that if you looked 5 years out, what would be a bigger franchise? Will it be some of the provinces, or will it be the national team? When you begin to look at it and look at the earning capability that's there.
Absolutely.
Because it plays week in, week out at a provincial level. So it might become the bigger franchise.
Absolutely. And as you say, the European competitions as well. Time to move on then to matters of an America. We mentioned it earlier. The story by Andrew Neil in today's Mail, his Saturday essay, really interesting. That my guess, he says, is that this election is still Trump's to lose, just because he starts attacking Harris on policy and not trivia, lose it he will. And that's one analysis. And we have another one which isn't quite as favourable towards Harris from the editorial in today's Irish Times. But Caroline, I have to say, I've thought a couple of things about this. I had watched the original debate between Biden and Trump and thought, my God, this is a car crash. And then, you know, from almost nowhere, even though she was a sitting vice president, she seems to have found her voice, found her stage. And I'm not saying that Biden oppressed her, but I think indirectly he did, because, you know, you don't if you're running for president, you don't want to be overshadowed
Absolutely.
By the vice president. But I think the Democrats have really, really got a bounce out of this. And as Neil says, this is Trump's to lose.
Absolutely. And they're calling it Kamala Mentum, her absolute momentum that she's got. And normally, as they've said in the Irish Times, it's normally a marathon rather than a sprint. But it's 100 days to win the White House is exactly what she's got from today. And I think that even though they may not have chosen her, they've unanimously basically backed her, including Obama, which I think has really shown with the €80 million funding she got within days of putting herself out there. But it seems the Republicans are fairly unprepared to actually take her on as the running, you know, the competition now. And instead of focusing on her politics and her policies, which are very liberal. And again, I suppose there's concerns that if she's actually in a debate, you know, is she going to perform as well as everybody thinks? It's nearly 50-50 at the minute is what the thoughts are, depending on the article that you read. But ultimately, it's the Trump is fighting her on as dirty a policy as he always did. But I think if they focused on her actual policies, I think that's where you'll get a real debate. And I think that's where it's going to come down to.
We're still a little unclear on her policies, Ronan, though, aren't
we? It is. She's transitioned a few times. She went from being hard on crime to be left on liberal and a number of areas that won't go well with some of the other kind of stalwart Democratic areas. Trump's always going to play the player, not the ball. He's like, I don't think he'll get in to policy debate because he doesn't do it that well.
Yeah.
So I think it's kind of neck and neck. I think the background to it was undoubtedly Obama. I mean, it was so staged, his final endorsement, that
it was a bit cringy, wasn't it?
Yeah, I think his hand is all over what needed to be achieved. And I mean, I think the necessity of it over time, of even things like the balance on the Supreme Court and stuff that really democratic. I think a lot of people in their hearts go, we'd like to see Democrats. As we're saying, markets always prefer Republicans. It's just the way of the world. It's amazing how little the economy is debated, because the economy is now performing well and better than other economies in the world. And used to say, it's all about the economy, stupid. Like, it just, it isn't.
When the economy is fine, it's not. Yeah. Find something else.
They always said whoever picked a younger candidate first would probably, may win as well. So it'll be interesting to see the next 100 days. The other thing I wondered a few times, and it's covered in one of the articles, was would she step, if he's not fit to run for office, is he fit to be the president? She would be a stronger candidate again as the sitting president, because you're presidential and people see you that way. Mm. That gives you another
Well, that could be another card to be played.
Oh, I think it could be, yeah.
Yeah. Well, we'll watch this space. On Matters HR, Caroline, I'm seeing here Cantillon telling us this morning that the IDA Ireland and Enterprise Ireland are struggling for staff. According to Peter Burke, the Minister for Enterprise, Enterprise Ireland currently has a 94.5 full-time equivalent post vacant. What does that mean?
So at the minute they have 94 vacancies for full-time equivalents, and the IDA have fewer than 30 vacancies. So ultimately, I suppose there are different stages of the recruitment process, they say, but that's a high amount of vacancies to have opened in particular. However, the IDA's policy is to advertise the role internally for 2 to 3 months first, and only then, if they can't get an internal candidate, do they go to the market. So you're really drawing out the process, I suppose, by...
Why would it take 3 months to assess an internal candidate?
I would say from the time they actually advertise, do the interviews and make a decision, it's a long time, Bobby. I wouldn't disagree with you. And I think in the current market, like, we still have full, you know, employment or as close to. And for somebody to move at the minute, you know, they need to be going to a very attractive proposition. And ultimately, we're being told here that some of these roles are very specialist, and that's proving a barrier. And the other is competition in terms of salary and package. However, I suppose ultimately job security is one of those big things you've got if you've got a job with the IDAs or the Enterprise Ireland. But is that really attractive anymore?
Is there job security anywhere anymore?
Fair point. But I think the generation now looking for jobs, they stay in a job 1, 2 years, 3 years max, and then they're moving around. So the proposition that you're getting job security versus maybe, you know, perks around gym membership and, you know, share price and getting really involved and active in a company that's exciting and different things happening, I think that's definitely a factor. However, Enterprise Ireland are doing very exciting things in terms of trying to come up with their new strategy, etc. But again, I think it's the type of jobs they have on the market. And overall, I mean, it's exciting to see Ireland now is a place that if you want a job, it's easy to get one because there's so many good ones on the market.
What do you think, Roland? Pay rates too low?
Possibly. I also think foreign direct investment has been so strong here that undoubtedly some of the companies coming in hire away the people that they deal with, the IDA and otherwise. Also competitive, I was just saying to Caroline, Kieran, the head of InvestNI, came from IDA in the last couple of months. So there's a little bit of movement between the two organisations. I think it's, it doesn't seem to have quite the same panache as it used to have. When you worked for the IDA, you would travel the world. These were parts of it, and it was seen as a springboard career. Doesn't seem to have quite the same level now.
Yeah.
A lot is about Irish investment, but everywhere is hard to hire. Like, everybody would say the job market, persuading people to change. An awful lot is about also things like remote working, flexible working, so many other things that if somebody is comfortable and their lifestyle is built around it, they don't really want to change.
Well, Mal Rogers in the Irish Mail today is asking, would you like to become a pilot, Caroline? He goes through the pros and cons of the role, talking about the Aer Lingus pilots. Now, it is a minority of them, the ability to earn 280 grand a year. But he talks about the perks of the job and who should apply and who shouldn't.
Yeah,
what did you make of that?
It's a nice article, to be fair. And what I really liked was some of the things that he deep dived into that I definitely didn't know. So, for example, one of the requirements of the job is an ability to swim 25 metres. Not sure what good that would do you.
If the plane lands in the local swimming pool.
Yeah, I think that's about it. And also, I suppose the fact that they were saying the real test of the job now is the first 2 minutes to test the aircraft when they get up and running, and the last 2 minutes test the pilot when they're trying to land the plane, because the rest is autopilot. And I think the other interesting thing was that the pilot and the co-pilot can't eat the same meal. So again, you know, in terms of risk management, it really is looking at the challenge.
What I liked, Ronan, was that they said that the posher the pilot sounds, the safer the passenger feels.
But I think that's built all around the uniform, the hat, like, you know, the establishment. I remember when they had automatic trains at one stage, they had to put a driver in just because people felt uncomfortable when there was no driver. So it's seen as part of that. I also thought, like, you know, when it's some of the other areas of the crew, you have to swim 25 metres, which I never knew that you had to do.
Yep.
I did know the fact that Willie Walsh, who now has one of the most senior industry positions, started as a pilot and worked on. So career path is very good. I thought one thing that worked against the pilots in the strike on the march, how many women pilots did you see?
Very few.
Yeah, very few. Yeah. And it struck me particularly about Aer Lingus, whereas in to be fair, in Ryanair, when you're sitting there and you hear the pilots, an awful lot more of them are female pilots. But it was all guys. I felt I was back in the, like, 1950s when I saw them all.
Even though I have to say the last Aer Lingus flight I was on very recently, and it was a female pilot. So good to see more diversity,
all right,
for sure.
Yeah. Well, we'll leave it there. Thanks for a great review of the business and other stories this morning. Ronan Reid from Cantor Fitzgerald, Caroline Reedy from the HR Suite. Enjoy your weekend.
Down to Business with Bobby Kerr.
Brought to you by Bank of Ireland.
Saturday morning at 11 on News Talk.
For almost 40 years, DR Power Equipment has been the go-to for homeowners who want professional-level outdoor power equipment. Whether you're managing acres of overgrown fields or just want to have the best lawn on the block, DR Power has everything you need to conquer your piece of the outdoors. Visit drpower.com today to learn more and shop the sale.